Well, welcome, everybody. We've got a fantastic interview coming up for you today, and I'm just very excited to introduce Anita Brusis, who is America's favorite workplace columnist. And Anita and I have worked over the years a number of different times. So let me tell you a little bit about her. She's an award-winning journalist with more than 20 years of experience. She's been a syndicated newspaper columnist on workplace issues with a readership of more than 8 million for Gannett News Service and USAtoday.com since 1990. She's written a couple of books, Take This Job and Thrive, and 45 Things You Do That Drive Your Boss Crazy and How to Avoid Them. It was named a top 10 most notable business book for 2007 by the New York Post and an Amazon.com top 20 career advice book. She's been the managing editor of an award-winning magazine for investigative journalists and has written for such diverse publications as Military Lifestyle, American Baby, and the Miami Herald. Also a highly rated speaker, she's addressed audiences on topics ranging from taking control of your career, avoiding workplace blunders, and responsible business blogging. She's appeared on the Today Show. She's been interviewed on public radio. She's been quoted in many national publications such as O, The Oprah Magazine, Glamour, Business Week, and many others. So welcome, Anita. So glad you're here.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Anita, now, you have a vast amount of experience in media. I just read your bio, which is very impressive. You've obviously been very successful, and you've worked both sides of the fence as a media insider and as someone who has been interviewed by other top-tier media outlets. So let's begin with the big, broad question. Media and our culture have changed a great deal over the last several years. So from your perspective, how have things changed? What have you seen?
Well, I think that what we see now, instead of only there being trained journalists who disseminate information, now with the ability of bloggers to get into records and reveal information and just the wide variety of ways that information can be distributed, that has really changed. I mean, you have Twitter, you have Facebook, you have Pinterest, you have Yelp, you have everything you can think of distributing information, whereas before, when I came up in the business, there was just, you know, newspapers, television, radio, there was trained people who were in charge of disseminating that information.
And now just about anybody can when they open
That's the right. account. Anybody can write anything they want.
So with all these changes, how has this impacted the way you do your job?
Well, in a lot of ways, it's made my job easier because whereas before you would get assigned a story, you would come up with a story idea, you know, it was a matter of getting on the phone and you might make 20 phone calls before you got one good lead, you know, on somebody. Now I can get on Twitter and say, I'm looking for somebody who, you know, is a working mom and, you know, decided to leave the workforce, and I get responses from people and can easily interview them. The other way it's changed my job is that it's a little bit more frustrating trying to weed out what is disinformation. I often have to trace something way back to the source because just because it's online does not mean it's true. And so as someone who was trained to be a journalist, I'm not going to publish anything that is not fact, is not sourced, that kind of thing. So in a way, it's made things better, and in a way, it's muddied the waters for me a bit.
It almost sounds like if you're looking for a regular person to talk to about their experience versus finding someone with the goods, with the credentials, with the authority and that kind of thing, that sounds like the two areas,
right?
One that makes it easier and one that makes it a little more difficult.
Right,
okay.
Right, because just about anybody can proclaim themselves an expert, and then you do some checking and you find out they really don't have the credentials, or the information they're giving they got from a third source and they don't really know it firsthand. But I do love the fact that I can get more in touch with people who are in the trenches, which is one of the things I loved the most when I first started out at newspapers. Was one of my favorite things was just to, you know, get out there among people who were going through everyday things and just really talk to them. I mean, that's always been a great joy for me. And so in a lot of ways, it's fun because the world is pretty much open to me to ask people questions, and I just think that's enormously interesting and entertaining.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. So let me ask you about credentials. So how important is it, if someone is coming to you with a story idea, how important are the credentials versus if they have, say, a huge network? What if they have a huge following? Does that impact your decision as to whether you're going to talk with someone or not?
It depends on what the network is in and why they have that network. Just because you have, you know, 100,000 followers on Twitter doesn't mean anything to me if you've tapped into some kind of source that, you know, automatically, you know, you respond to everybody and you, you know, are automatically added to every kind of list. That doesn't necessarily make you an authority. What I'm looking for is, you know, people who have shown experience in this area. I don't necessarily have to have, you know, a master's and a PhD in a subject, but I am looking for people who I feel like have done their homework. Mm-hmm. You know, just because you have a bunch of Twitter followers doesn't mean that you've done your homework and you've really, you know, gotten a feel for this subject. On the other hand, you know, I get gobs of books sent to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read some books from very highly touted people that are touted as experts that I just, you know, between you and me, I just think they're hogwash. I just, you know, I've just been doing this long enough. I'm like, you know, this is nothing new. This is just recycled. I don't buy this. And then I'll get an author or someone who I think has really well thought out ideas that I feel like the readers would gain something by hearing that information. And some of my favorite books are by people who, you know, were never on bestseller lists, but they did their homework, they did their work, and I could tell that they really thought things through carefully, and I felt like were really giving valuable information to people.
Well, that's very encouraging. So if we're speaking about publishing in particular, I mean, it's very easy to publish now. So do you look at whether someone has a big publishing company or even if they're self-published, as long as the content is really solid, that's what you consider first?
I look at content always. I have interviewed self-published people. You know, I've interviewed FBI experts who wrote such interesting books on how to interact with people and decide if they're telling the truth, you know, how to read their body language, that kind of stuff, because these people were trained investigators or they were, you know, trained in that area. They're not necessarily trained writers that the big publishing houses are going to pick up, but I still think their information is valuable. So that's always what I'm looking for. I always try and envision in my mind when I'm writing, I envision those people in the cubicles or on the factory floor or the college student just getting out of college, and I think, if I'm going to write this, is this really something they can use? Is this a roadmap they could maybe follow or it adds to their knowledge? But if I feel like it's just a rehash of something that's already out there and that I don't feel like it's really adding value, I will probably move on to something else.
Very interesting, because you've been writing for USA Today, Gannett News Service, for 24 years?
Well, it's probably more than that. The column just turned 24
Which
years
I didn't,
old.
I didn't name it. What's the name of the column again?
It's called On the Job.
Right, and it's excellent. So you've been writing that a long time. You've seen a lot come over your desk.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I mean, how, you know, is there really new things under the sun? There must be, because you're always writing another column.
Yeah,
so,
I think there is. You know, the workplace is the same in that, you know, we take a job to earn money to support ourselves. But the workplace has changed so much. I mean, the different things that impact it. For example, we have the Great Recession. So we have kids coming out of school, $80,000 in debt. Great educations, cannot get a job outside of Starbucks. Mm. You know, that's, we have healthcare reform that is causing employers not to want to hire some full-time people and only keeping them, you know, at less than 30 hours. We have a lot of people who are saying, you know what, I'm not going to go back to school to get my MBA. I'm going to learn what I need to learn online in a self-directed learning way, and that's how I'm going to increase my skills. We have smartphones that basically have increased our work time. You know, I think they said something like we're working 5 extra days a year now with the time that we're working at home. So there are a lot of new issues that impact work. And I've always said, you know, there is no holy grail of workplace advice, and I really believe that. What I believe my job is to do is to offer as much as I can, and people can look at that and say, yeah, that applies to me. I can, you know, that's something I'm going through, or no, not so much, but, you know, maybe in the future I'll need that information. I just keep churning it out there with the idea of if you can use it, great. I've done my job, and I'll just keep pushing it out there until, you know, you find a way to deal with your bully boss, or you find a way to get that next promotion, or you find a way to get that job when you're a long-term unemployed.
So you really, you're always looking for ideas.
Oh, always.
You must be. Yeah, you must be.
Always. I mean, I do everything from eavesdrop at parties to listen to people in grocery store lines. I read what people are posting on Twitter. I read a ton of workplace stuff every week. I'm always looking what other people are writing. I'm reading research studies. I'm reading books. And sometimes, you know, stories are triggered by, say, what I'm going through at work, or, you know, because I'm working just as well as everybody else. I'm going through the same issues that everyone else is going through. Or it could be that, you know, one of my kids is going through an issue, or, you know, a sister-in-law is going through an issue, something like that. You know, those are always things that I know if it's happening to them, it's got to be happening to other people.
And just to generalize this a little bit, because we have other people, we have people listening who don't necessarily have a subject related to the workplace, but would you say in general journalists writing columns and that sort of thing, they're all pretty much doing the same thing. They're looking for story ideas, and they want to hear from people who have good ideas.
Okay. Right. I once came across this little quote, and I had it up on my bulletin board, and it says something like, "Dear God, whatever happens, don't let me die one column ahead," or something like that. You know, and that's especially true now, because there's such a demand for people to push constant content, because it is 24/7 content now. Used to be in the days of, you know, journalism where you had a deadline maybe once or twice a day. I mean, I know lots of journalists that, you know, have several deadlines a day, myself included, and you're always looking for information, and you're always looking for a way to maybe tie several different elements together. I always tell people who send me story ideas, don't worry that I'm going to forget about you, because I don't. Sometimes I'll hold on to something for 6 months or a year before I find a place to plug it in. It's kind of like a big jigsaw puzzle. Sometimes a story can't stand on its own, but if I put it with a couple of different elements, or I'm doing a trend story, or I need a source, I'll plug those elements in.
I've been on the other end of that, too. I've had people contact me a year later and say, hey, you know, I want to talk to so-and-so, so I can vouch for that. That's absolutely true.
Yep.
So what grabs your attention when someone, first of all, do you like to be approached via social media, like Twitter or email, or how do you like to first speak?
I'd rather have email, because, number one, I'm in that competitive frame of mind, and if you're pushing it to me on social media, then all my competitors can see it also.
Right.
I like email because, you know, it gives me a chance to consider it. I am on several deadlines a day, and I often don't have time to read something that minute or talk to you on the phone, so it gives me a chance to kind of read through it and look at it. Do you want me to tell you my pet peeves?
Are you kidding? I'd love to hear your pet peeves.
Okay. Pet peeves. Here we go. Pet peeves are when you promote a story to me that you've already promoted and is being done by another major media outlet, someone that is a competitor of mine. You know, if you've done that, let me know or offer me a different angle, but don't push the same angle to me, because I work a week in advance. So I could get my story done, and tomorrow I pull up Forbes or the Wall Street Journal, and there's the story, and I'm sunk.
Mad.
Other thing is, I so appreciate PR people. I really do. I could not do my job without them. I really can't. And there's only probably been over 20-some years, there's only been a couple that I would not work with again, and I'm, you know, I think they probably have left the business. But, you know, I have great respect for what you do. So if you send me a pitch, I now have a pretty set response that I respond and say, thank you for your email. I got it. I will consider it individually and get back to you when I can. I actually had to do that because I was just I could spend hours just answering emails. And if I didn't answer them, the person continued to send me notes saying, did you get it? Did you get it?
Yeah.
Did you get it? Did you get it? Well, that was driving me insane, and I didn't want to be rude. So that's the other thing. Most journalists do not want to be almost hounded about these emails.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you send a pitch, you kind of just have to take your chance. You can't follow up, you know, in a day, 2 days, constantly saying, did you get it? Did you get it? You know, it just, I don't know what anybody else's email is like, but I could spend, you know, just 2 days answering, did you get it, emails.
But your response to that, having a standard answer, is just ideal, because then the person
will
say, okay,
hope,
she got
you
it.
Know, I hope so, but it looks like what is starting to happen is that some of the PR people are now starting me to write back to me to say, oh, well, and they're trying to say, just checking in one more time. They're trying to still get that individual response. And while I know and appreciate and respect all the PR people out there and have worked with them many times one-on-one, if they could see how many of those I get a day, I think they would understand that I'm trying to be respectful and nice about it and show them that I appreciate the work and I'm not just trashing everything they send me. But it's a little unrealistic to expect me to respond continually to every email request.
Yeah.
Like I said, I do appreciate the pitches, and I keep them, and I tell them, you know, you'll hear from me if I can use it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably my biggest pet peeve is that them and this has been a pet peeve of journalists for as long as I can remember. I'll get pitch stories on some topic that never in a million years do I cover in my column or any, you know, and I would just as soon not receive those emails. I would rather them really kind of look at what I do. It's pretty clear. It's online. It's 20 years worth,
yeah.
You know, and kind of stick to the subject. Some emails, they don't even get my canned response. I just kind of laugh and say, I don't even know why you're sending this to me. And I just kill it right then.
Yeah, yeah. Any more? I know you have more, but.
Oh,
this is your chance.
not really. You know. Oh, okay. One more. Don't promote a source to me, and then I call you back and want to interview the source, and the source is out of the country for the next 3 weeks.
Oh,
that's a big one. That I have had happen. I have had it where they promote this source, I jump on it, I'm on deadline, I'm ready to go, and this person not only is, you know, not available that day, they're not available for 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
You know, you can forget it. That's, you know, off my radar.
Yeah, that's pretty surprising, actually.
Yeah, and the sources need, for somebody like myself that works for, you know, daily newspapers, that source needs to be available within 24 to 48 hours. We can't wait longer than that. And to say, well, let me see where he is. I don't know. He's really busy. Well, then why are you promoting him to me?
Yeah, yeah.
If he's too busy to be interviewed, forget it.
Yeah. No, I've encouraged people along these very lines, because I remember going after a particular large newspaper columnist, and she said no. She'd just recently done the topic, so I waited 6 months. And meanwhile, my client really wanted this, really, really, really wanted this. So he was always asking me about it. And I went back to her about 6 months later. We got it. She was ready. And she wanted to talk to him within 5 minutes. And, you know, so – but what happened was we had been trying for 6 months, finally got it, had that five-minute window. So that's why I encourage people, you know, if you're going to put anything out there, you've got to be available, especially now.
Right.
There's so many channels. So I'm
right.
trying to help you with that. So.
Yeah, I think some of that is the sources are not prepared. Now, I will tell you, I interviewed somebody in the last week, and he's fairly famous. He was probably one of the worst interviews I've ever had.
Oh, really?
He was.
Wow.
Either I thought either A, he's high, or two, I just woke him up, or three, he's got a problem. You know, he could hardly speak and could not, didn't even act like he, I said to him, I said, you're ready for our interview, right? Oh, yeah. Oh. But he wasn't. He was very unprepared. And I had sent basically an outline before I talked to him, telling him what I was going to be talking about. So that's the other thing. If your sources, you know, if you're going to put your source out there, make sure they're prepared. If that means you go over some potential questions with them, that they have notes in front of them, if that's what they need. But he was probably one of the worst interviews I've ever had in, you know, eons of reporting, and he's quite famous.
Wow. So he's lucky you're not blogging about him.
Well, yeah, and I would never do that. And I actually interviewed another very famous person who's been on Oprah many times, and I started interviewing him as he's driving to an airport, and it didn't matter what I asked him. He went back to his canned responses, which had nothing to do with what I was asking him about.
Oh, boy.
It was just canned response after canned response after canned response. He was not listening at all to what I was asking him.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my thing, would be, you know, really making sure your sources are prepared. I don't care what big shots they are. If they're terrible interviews, they're terrible interviews, and you know, they could either get dumped or used so sparingly that they might be upset. So you're doing them a favor as well to make sure that they're ready to go.
Yeah, well, this is a real point being made for media training. You know, making
right,
sure
exactly.
that you know your key messages and how to deliver them and make them compelling. Speaking of compelling, if someone sends you an email, what kind of subject lines grab your attention and what don't?
The subject lines, I'm not one of those people that's a real stickler for those. I mean,
okay.
They almost always say story idea or something like that, and I understand what they're about. But when pitches are being made to me, people, I appreciate it when I can tell that, you know, sometimes I'll have a story on, say, stay-at-home moms. And someone will send me a pitch immediately and say, I see you covered stay-at-home moms. Well, here I have a stay-at-home mom. And they're basically pitching me the very same story that I just did.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do the very same story again.
Right.
I can see a link saying, well, have you thought about stay-at-home dads? Or have you thought about the companies that support stay-at-home moms? Or something like that. But if it's just because you have somebody that does the same thing, I am not going to revisit that subject that
soon. No, it's been
like
covered.
You said,
yeah.
You waited 6 months.
Right.
And that's basically what I'm going to do. I like stories that, you know, they can give me some. If it's just strictly a promotional story on a product, I'm usually not interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested more in, like I said, my focus is the person in the workplace. And if you can tell me something that will help them, or if you understand that, you know, my columns are, you know, about these kind of subjects, and that's it. A lot of really good publicists will do some background research and say, here's these three studies that support this, and he can address all these topics. And they're not just strictly promoting, you know, this company, this product. They're saying, see, this is a trend, and this company is part of that trend. You know, they're thinking more like journalists instead of like marketers pushing, you know, the latest soap.
Right. There's a huge distinction between the two. Marketers are trying to, you know, do that with their free content and that sort of thing, but they still don't quite have it down.
Mm-hmm.
You've always got to be looking at the journalist and their audience and what their audience
right.
would want.
I can't turn that kind of stuff into my editors. You know,
yeah.
I can't turn that kind of stuff in. And it's not that I'm lazy and I don't want to do the work, but if you can kind of show me a clearer path about what you're talking about, then I'm more interested in that.
And maybe even offering some resources, people you can
right.
talk to.
Mm-hmm. Right,
yeah.
Right. Lots of times what I really like is somebody, for example, will, you know, DreamWorks. I think I did a story with them. Well, it was on DreamWorks and some of their company policies, but they said, you know, we can connect you with an employee who actually worked on this project.
Mm-hmm.
And we can connect you with the CEO, and we can connect you with so-and-so. And it was like, oh, okay, yeah, I see you've got all your ducks lined up. You know, this is a well-thought-out proposal. That's what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be lengthy. I'm not asking you to do my work. But if it's so narrowly focused, I just feel like you're trying to cram a product on me, and then I'm not as sure about it.
Right. Yeah. Because you've got a limited amount of time, really, and a limited amount of energy, and how much time you're going to spend trying to figure it out.
Right.
Right.
And that's when your proposal may be going to sit there longer, is because then I have to put all the pieces of the puzzle together, whereas if you can collect some stuff and put it in there, you know, and I really appreciate the PR people who go to the trouble to kind of point out trends to me that I may not have seen. I always think that that requires a lot of hard work and initiative, and I'm always very appreciative of that.
And does that ever lead you to, you know, learn some new topic or some new
experience? Yeah. I've been doing a lot more lately on self-directed learning and the different forms that takes, because a lot of people don't want to take on student loan debt, or they're entrepreneurs and they don't have time to go back to school. And so you have all these different things that are available to help you learn online. And I think that's hugely important for a lot of people who have families and don't have time to go back to school, or people, you know, have such demanding jobs now that they want to figure out a way to self-educate themselves. And I know that a lot of millennials love this self-directed learning. And one of the things I've talked about is using that to let your employer know that you're continuing to educate yourself. You know, it really is an investment in your own career, but you're also helping your employer with that self-directed learning.
So you mentioned entrepreneurs. Do you ever write about entrepreneurs?
Sometimes. With Gannett, we have a small business regular columnist, so I try not to tread too much on that.
Okay.
But I have at times. You know, it just depends on what it's about. Sometimes it has to do with you know, an entrepreneur that, you know, it's part of their career plan, that kind of stuff. But I usually don't focus too much on them. Every once in a while I will.
And do you ever write on, let's say, people who they're in the workplace or they work for a company, but maybe half the time they're working from home? And so it's sort of a different...
I've written on flex time and work from home. And, mm-hmm. and of course, some of the stories I've done on that over the years have been, how do you keep yourself in the mind of the company leaders when you're not physically there? The challenges that come with remote work. So what I did was I found a couple people who were remote workers, and what they did to make sure that they didn't fall off the radar of the bosses, and how they dealt with some of the communication challenges and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting. So what are some of the what stands out in your mind as just a fantastic pitch, something that just really, maybe the time was right, the subject was right? Are there any that really stand out in your mind?
I'm trying to think. You know, I like stories a lot of times that universities pitch me, because they will have different people in their various schools, whether it's the exercise department or the psychology department or whatever, who've done really interesting experiments on the workplace, uh-huh. you know, what leads to power struggles or who garners the most power at work. You know, those kind of stories always catch my attention, because that's always brand new information. I'm trying to think, you know, a lot of companies will collect their own data that they've got online. Maybe they're running a company on flexible jobs, so they've been able to see, you know, the company's offering the most flex positions, or how you go about getting those flex jobs. Or I think I recently interviewed Glassdoor, because they were talking about the jobs that really pay off to go back and get your master's, and the ones that it's just a waste of time. So if you can, I always like stories that kind of give me some hard data mm-hmm. to back up what it is they're saying. It's not just, oh, our expert believes. No, it's he's done a study of hundreds of companies, or, you know, he's got a proven track record, you know, in leadership with these people, or, you know, something like that. A lot of people now a lot of people, for a lot of different reasons, do surveys and polls of different people, and I like those as long as they're not being pitched to everybody and their dog, and I'm going to use it, and then it's going to show up online in 50 other outlets. It's okay if I beat them, if I'm the first one, but I don't want to be in the middle of that pack.
Yeah. Yeah, that's understandable. So you work for a pretty big company. Do you ever go into the workplace, or are you pretty much in your own space?
No, I don't. I am one of those people. I have been working for myself for 24 years. As it happened, 24 years ago, my husband was an editor of newspapers, and the way you move up in newspapers is they move you around. They move you all, they used to move us all over the country, and we had little kids at the time, and the only way that I could keep a career was to basically set up my own shop. So I've been doing it for a long time. But, I mean, I do go into various clients, and meet with them and talk with them. And so I know the demands of that. But I also know that, people always say to me, I want to do what you do, Anita. And I'm like, you know what? Be careful what you say, because it's not it's not all it's cracked up to be. It can at times be more demanding. Back in the old days, I used to, put on my answering machine and walk out of my home office, and that was it. Now I've got my smartphone with me. Email's always on. People can always reach me. And I never get away from work. I'm at work 24/7. So when I write those stories about the demands of work, I know firsthand of what I speak.
Yeah, you sure do. And you were really on the front end of going out and being self-employed, if you will. I mean,
yes, I really was. I was the only woman I knew who did it for many years. And I've had a couple of fellowships, journalism fellowships, and I would go and do the journalism fellowships, and it would never fail. The women would pull me to the side and say, I want to do what you do. Mm-hmm. I've got young children at home, or I'm tired of working in the office, or I want to do this, or I, want to do that. And I'm like, you know what? I was one of those kids where the term paper was assigned in school, and I started it that day.
That's good.
You have to be of that kind of mindset. You have to be extremely organized, extremely disciplined, extremely focused. You will not find me at my desk in my pajamas. I am at my desk by 6:30 every morning. I have deadlines. I have multiple clients. I answer to multiple bosses. And you think working for one boss is hard. You ought to try and do it with multiple bosses. And, some people, it can be very isolating. For me, it's not isolating because I get to talk to people like you all over the country, so I feel like I have, plenty of contacts. But it's not for everybody, and I certainly, like I said, there's no holy grail of workplace advice. I don't believe there's a holy grail for anybody about where and how they should work. Everybody is different.
So a lot of it is knowing your strengths and figuring out
right.
what you're best at and
right.
Playing up to those. And
right.
So I've been out on my own for 18 years now, coming up on 18 years. So you've got me beat by quite a few, but 18 is quite a while. And so I remember, through the years, people have said to me, I don't know how you can, work from home because, I'd be wanting to, do the laundry and, do this and that. And I'd look at them and say, well, then you're not busy enough because I don't have time to do any of that.
right, exactly. Because I had somebody say to me, how do you keep on track? And I said, I have a schedule just like you have a schedule. But I know that there's sometimes when I start to get distracted, and I will say out loud to myself, what are you supposed to be doing right now, Anita? And I'm like, okay, not that. It's supposed to be this. And I had a boss a long time ago tell me that you had to figure out what you were worth per hour and then decide which task was worth your time. Is it really worth your time doing the laundry, or is it really worth your time writing a story that you're going to make a lot more money for?
Mm-hmm.
You would not ask your employee to be doing menial tasks when they are a skilled worker who can only do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the way you have to look at it. When I'm working, and that's how I make my money. And the other stuff, I don't make money doing laundry. I don't get paid to do laundry.
Right.
And that can wait.
What do you think about all the layoffs that have happened over the last several years? I'm sure that, I don't know about within Gannett. Maybe there have been.
Oh, there's been,
I
everywhere.
Figured,
plenty.
I didn't want to assume, but certainly the newspaper industry, there's been a lot about that. Let's talk about the industry itself. What do you see happening there? You've seen people being let go and maybe starting their own businesses. And what are some of your thoughts about that?
Well, first of all, it's so heartbreaking because I know everybody likes to take their jabs at journalists, but it really is a calling for us. It's a passion. We never have been paid a lot for what we do, and we work really hard at it. I think what is interesting is when people all decide they would become bloggers. Well, that lasted for like a year before everybody said, oh, my gosh, this is really hard. I can't think of enough stuff to do. I'm sick to death of writing. I just don't want to do this anymore. And they just quit. And they came to appreciate a little bit more what we do. I think even though there's a lot of newspaper or, you know, people that lost their jobs, I think a lot of them have rebounded into the online world. I know for me, it was scary there for a couple of years. I couldn't figure. I knew something was going on because freelancers often feel it first. We're like the canaries in the mine. You know, mm-hmm. I could see clients folding right and left, and I mm-hmm. thought, here comes a recession, and I was right. But at the same time, I started doing the only thing I knew how to do, which was I just started researching, and I could see more things happening online, and I started going to bloggers' conferences, and I started getting involved in social media. And for a couple of years there, I wasn't real sure what I was doing, but I knew that I was learning. And so what happened was when all the layoffs and everything came through and there not as many people were physically working at newspapers, I was ready to go online.
Mm-hmm.
And I had those networks set up and started getting a lot of online work. I still say that no matter what, you're going to have trained journalists, because what we've learned is that, well, what journalists have always known is there is a huge responsibility with writing. People see something and they believe it, whether it's true or not online. And I think a lot of people have been hurt by untrained people who don't know how to verify information. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to get the correct information. They don't ensure their own accuracy. And that can cause a lot of hurt and problems, and it is a huge responsibility. And unless you're willing to do it correctly, you shouldn't be doing it. So I think it's my great hope that what will happen is eventually we'll see a lot more of those trained journalists who understand what to do and the ramifications, and that they will begin writing more of the online content so that it is more fact-based. So that we can get more correct information out there to, you know, really prevent a lot of harm that's being done.
And that's an argument for critical thinking and learning critical
yes.
thinking for sure. So the beauty of universities, and they teach that.
Kind yes.
of thing.
Yes.
I almost felt like, Anita, I almost felt like I was hearing myself for a moment there when you talked about the couple of years where you went really into learning mode. I think one of the beautiful things about kind of being on your own is that you are looking and paying
mm-hmm.
attention. And sometimes when you are, I think this really is an argument for if you work within a company in a workplace, you still need to be very aware of what's going on in your industry and other industries and
right.
continue to build your own networks. Because what I saw and still see, but particularly a few years ago, I saw people put their head in the sand.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't want
yeah.
it. They didn't want to see it.
Right. Well, I think what happens is, and I've always talked about this with jobs, is that you kind of get this mentality of the employer as your parent. You may or may not like this parent, but you figure they're there to take care of you. You're going to show up every day, and they're going to take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really the way it is. And it was very frustrating for me when the recession hit, and I saw how many people lost their jobs, and they had done nothing
mm-hmm.
to protect themselves or to hit the ground running. They didn't have any contacts, and they hadn't, you know, they hadn't researched where they wanted to go, and they hadn't kept their skills up. I mean, it went so far as one man told me, he said, you know, the last time I looked for a job, I just picked up a copy of the New York Times and went to the want ads.
Wow.
He said, I didn't even know what LinkedIn was. And I just was like, oh, my gosh. Fortunately, he found a job, but he was not unusual. And I thought, you know what? Have you none of you been reading my column for the last 20 years? Did none of you pay attention? You know, but it really is true in that you really have to run your career like your own business. You might be employed with Apple or Google, or you might be working for Southwest Airlines or a local grocery store, but your employer will pay you to do your job, but he doesn't pay you to map out your career. That's your responsibility. And a lot of the millennials now really want career development. That's what they're really attracted to. And in a perfect world, an employer would give that to you. They would help you develop your career. But you have to think of your manager is probably just as busy as you are and just as consumed as you are, and why he or she would love to offer you career development, chances are that's way down on their list. So it's up to you to do it. And I had somebody mention this to me one time, and I thought this was an excellent idea. Just as you put away money every year for your 401k plan or your Christmas fund or your vacation fund, put money away every year for your career fund. Hmm. And what you do with that money every year is you go to an industry conference, or you go to something where you're making contacts, where you're learning. I went to a conference several years ago where they offered a special session on speaking to the media. Well, I was a member of the media, but I was, as you said, being called on to speak to the media. So I went to a session to learn how to do that and spent a day with a woman who had worked with Michael Jordan and all these big athletes, and she taught you how to, you know, give your sound bites and work on television and all that. I went to a bloggers conference. I gave a talk on how you gather facts and data and verify information. But then I sat there for 2 days and listened to what everybody else had to say. And that Twitter had just started. And I remember I signed up for Twitter and I made all these contacts, and we talked about SEO and all that stuff that, you know, was kind of cutting edge. 2 weeks later, I went to a journalism conference. They weren't talking about any of that. They weren't addressing any of that. Wow. So, see, if I had stuck just with that, I wouldn't have known. And I can remember saying, I advise anybody to go to a conference where they are the stupidest person in the room, because that's the best for you. Because I felt incredibly stupid sitting at this bloggers conference where they were talking about analytics and all this stuff. But I took notes furiously, and I came home, and I kept researching, and I kept learning, and it paid off.
Yeah.
It scared me to think that there was all this out there that I didn't know, and right, I needed to figure it out.
Right, right. That's a wonderful story. Are you familiar with something called the infinity loop?
No.
I know this sounds like a way off the topic, but it's not, I promise. I'll bring it back.
Okay.
It's like the numeral 8, but it's on its side, so it has two loops. It just keeps looping. If you run your finger along, it just keeps looping. And in one loop, so this really helped me to figure this out. On one loop, I wrote the word expert because, you know, I have a lot of knowledge in PR.
Right.
And I was a media person for a number of years in radio, so that was expert. And then on the other loop, I wrote beginner.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's always looping back and forth.
Right.
You're an expert in some areas, you develop your skills, but you've always got to go out there and learn some new things because this is an ever-changing world. So
right,
you just keep looping back. And once I got that, oh, man, I felt so much freedom, and I felt like, okay, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah. It's scary, but it's fun and it's exciting. And the best feeling in the world is when you're talking to a 20-something and you know what they're talking about. You know, I get it. And the best feeling in the world is when you're telling them things they don't know.
Yeah.
And they're sharing with you. And that's the one thing that I think is the coolest thing about being a journalist, is that you talk to such a wide variety of people. I mean, from all walks of life, all kinds of experiences. But you know what? Anybody can do that. You can ask anybody questions. Just, you know, really look for people that you think you can learn something from or might have a different perspective, because you'd be surprised. I'm always looking for story ideas, but you could do the same thing. You're just looking for ideas. You're just looking to kind of expand your brain and your thinking. And like I said, go and be the stupidest person in the room, you know? Go and ask dumb questions, you know? Just go and learn. And I've never asked anybody anything where they've said, that's such a dumb question, I'm not even going to answer it. People love to talk. They yeah. love to answer questions about things they're passionate about. It doesn't matter how many times you ask them about it. They love to talk about it. So you're really missing a great opportunity with all the people that are online and all the people that are willing to talk and share information. You know, go and just open your brain.
That's really good advice, Anita. Say, let's talk a little bit about what you're up to right now. I know you're writing your column with USA Today and Gannett, but you've also got, what else are you doing? You're doing
Intuit's Fast Track blog, and it's been really great. We've got a lot of really good people together on the blog, and we write a lot of business and career articles, and it's a really good group. It's a fun, good team because we're all so in awe of one another. We're all basically freelancers, and we've all known each other for a long time or worked with one another for a long time. And we're just so in sync together, and we're just having a ball doing this blog. And it's just, you know, Intuit, I don't know if you know anything about the company, but they're just phenomenal. They're super supportive of their people, and they're always just excited about new stuff and open to ideas. And you can just feel your brain grow working with them. It's phenomenal.
I love that.
And then I also am a contributing editor for Smart Brief. And Smart Brief runs a whole bunch of newsletters out of Washington, D.C., and I do the one on career and the one on workforce, which is like human resource stuff. So it all pretty much goes, you know, hand in hand with each other, where I'm constantly working and talking to other people about workplace and career issues. And so it's a lot of fun. And the thing about career and workplace is that it involves people. So it's endlessly fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot of fun. I covered economics for a while. And I was like, you know, numbers and I just, you know, they're just not the most interesting. I mean, I learned a lot, but it was at the end of the day, I just wanted to get back to talking to people. And that's what I get to do all day. So it's enormously fun.
Well, you can certainly hear your passion for what you do. We covered a lot of ground in this interview, and I so appreciate your time, Anita. Is there anything else that you'd like to add that maybe we haven't discussed that you just
No, I think you did a great job.
No, well, I had a great subject, so thank you for being here. Okay, so Anita Brusis, thank you so much, and appreciate it. We'll be looking for you in your column and in your various places, Smart Brief and Intuit's Fast Track blog. People can go online and follow you on Twitter. I know you're pretty active there. I've seen you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm always on Twitter. It's a lot of fun because I read and research so much all day, and I think, oh, somebody else should look at this. Oh, this would be good. Oh, you know. So it's a really fun way for me to continue to push information out there that I think people might find valuable.
Oh, so that's what you're doing, because I see lots of links, not only, you know, your own stories, of course, but other things, too, that you've run across as you're researching.
Oh, yeah, because that's all I do all day long is read workplace and career stuff. So I'm happy to promote other writers who I think are, you know, have got some valuable stuff. Like I said, you know, you've got to find what works for you. So if I push the information to you, then you've got the resources to make your right decisions.
Anita, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Anita Brusis, award-winning journalist, syndicated newspaper columnist with Gannett News Service. And, wow, so inspiring. Melanie, are you still with us here?
Oh, yes, I am.
Wasn't that great?
That was great. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we did cover a lot of ground. We talked about media and the changes that have taken place and how she can find people to talk to very easily now through social media, and yet you still have to have the fundamentals if you're going to go after, if you're going to pitch her an idea. It's, you know, you want to have a really solid, good idea, so you want to do some research. We talked about a few pet peeves, which are very important to discuss, and then we got into the workplace and managing your own career, and just talking to her was very inspiring. So that was call number two in our Big Media Shift series of interviews, Anita Brusis. Let me spell her name if you want to shout out at Twitter, you know, thanks, Anita. It's Anita Brusis, and it's spelled A-N-I-T-A-B-R-U-S-I-S. Bruzzese. Okay? Bruzzese. So you could send a tweet out, say hi. I'm sure she'd appreciate that. And we do have a hashtag, which is, what are we using now? MBC14, which stands for Media Boot Camp 2014. MBC14. And that way people, you know, if they do some searching, they can find that. Media Boot Camp, basically, it's just a way to help you develop your ideas and pitch media and get coverage. And that's what I help people to do. And talking to people like Anita, and we spoke with Frank Munjum yesterday, and we have Tara Rummel-Burson coming up tomorrow. This is a way to really be in touch with what's happening now because things keep changing. And so I always want to reach out and talk to those people who are out doing the work. It's their jobs. It's their livelihood. It's their career. It's their passion. And they're also very in tune with what's going on in the industry. So that's why we're doing these calls, so that you get familiar with all of this. And then later on, there'll be an invitation if you want to join me in Media Boot Camp, which would be wonderful. But I'll tell you more about that later. What I want to tell you now, before we wrap up, is that our call tomorrow, again, is Tara Rummel-Burson. And Tara has been a writer for women's magazines extensively. She was on staff at Redbook for a number of years. Now she's writing for several big online media outlets. And so she's going to share how things have changed from her perspective and how you can pitch her and work with her and what works for her and what doesn't work for her, that kind of thing. So it's more information, and I'm sure it will be helpful as you figure out how you want to take your service, your product, your book, your cause, whatever it is that you want to take it out on a much bigger, visible way. Anything else you want to add, Melanie?
Oh, I was writing up a storm, and I just really appreciate her sharing everything, even her pet peeves, and, you know, what is the best way to approach people, you know, like her. And I also appreciate the fact of her mentioning that it's important what we're putting out is valuable, accurate content.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is so true. There's so much out there. We really need to discern, you know, what it is and what it isn't. So I just really enjoyed this.
I want to also make the point that different media folks prefer things done in a different way. So Anita was saying you don't necessarily want to pitch an idea via the social sites because everyone else can see it too. It's better to approach her with email, which makes perfect sense. Frank Munjum yesterday, on the other hand, wanted pitches via the social sites. So there are differences, and I think this is another reason that it's good to have these kind of interviews. So I want you to understand it's different for different people. So if you're going to pitch Anita or anyone else, you want to research what exactly is it that they do, what is their focus, and then look at what they've covered the last, I don't know, several months. If you can, it's not hard anymore. I mean, there was a day when we used to have to buy these really expensive media databases. I mean, it was a challenge to get this kind of information, and now it's at your fingertips, so there's no reason not to do it. So you want to research what they've been covering and what's a new spin that you have, what's a new idea that you can offer that would capture her or his interest, depending on who you're going after. So it's just really it's really critical to do that. You don't want to just send your stuff and leave it to someone else to try to figure out, because they won't. I mean, we're all busy, right? We're all busy. So speaking of being busy, I'm going to let you go. We're almost at the top of the hour, and I always like to keep these things on time. In fact, I always like to end a couple of minutes early. Don't you love meetings that end a little early? I'm always grateful for that. So with that, I'm going to say goodbye for now, and I hope to see you at our call tomorrow with Tara. It starts at 4 p.m. Pacific, 5 Mountain, 6 Central, and 7 Eastern, and I think it's like midnight if you're in the UK. But you do get the replay, and you have 48 hours to listen to that if that works better for you. Okay? Melanie, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Joanne.
You bet. And goodbye, everybody. Have a wonderful day. Hope to see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.